This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 861, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, this is my co-host Josh Flanagan, and this is iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 861.
Hey there.
Hello. I feel like, this is no disrespect to Dr. Reinhardt, I feel like last week was like practice, because you had a thing that popped up that you had to leave for, so the whole show I had my eye on the clock and I was not really relaxed.
It was so unprofessional, and I apologize to everyone.
No, I was just saying. It's saying like I was distracted the whole time because I was nervous about you being late. So I was
sure
half paying attention to the conversation, half watching the clock. And it wasn't until after you left that I got to relax and do the
really?
Show.
I hope you had fun. I hope you did a good job after I was gone.
That was just a warm up. We're back now. We're back. So let's have some fun. And every week, one of us picks the book they like the best from the stack of the comics. We call it the pick of the week. We're going to talk about that book. We're going to talk about other books in the week, the patron pick, the listener mail, if we have time. And here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show, so just be cautious. And this week, Josh, you had the pick of the week.
I did. I had the pick of this week. And the pick of the week this week here specifically is, hey, before I say it, The Avengers War Against Time number one. I saw this in the this in the lists, and I thought, what is that? Some sort of, because Marvel does a lot of reprints. They do a lot of facsimile editions. They put stuff out from the past, and it looked to me like this is some old collection of Avengers stories from the 60s or early 70s.
Well, even further, they've been doing so many of little things around the end of Jason Aaron's run before I even saw the cover. I thought, oh, this is another tie-in. Because Jason Aaron's thing is basically a war across time, too, right? It's just like...
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, this is war across time. Not against
time. So I checked, look at the details, and I see Paul Levitz and Alan Davis, and I think, well, this can't be new. But it is, in fact, new, but only in that it was published this week. Other than
Yeah.
It's a comic...
It takes place... After Avengers 11.
Right. So 60.
In the 60s.
Yeah. And it makes no, that's where it is, what it is. It makes no excuses. It doesn't try to update. This is the 60s. There are men in the middle age talking about the big war. It's
every man.
And it's, haven't heard from Paul Levitz in a while. And the fact is, when he was doing a lot of work, I was not a reader who appreciated that enough. And also, I was excited to see Alan Davis because I haven't in a while. And seeing, and he inked and Druid himself, not his longtime partner, Mark Farmer, which is interesting because, as you know, some of these guys age, you see some of it start to slip, but at the same time, you can also see the same old genius that was there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you mentioned that to me, you know, earlier in the week, and the only thing I saw was, I feel like without Mark Farmer, it was a little less smooth. But I didn't really think he, you know, it wasn't like he lost his step, really. It looks slightly different, and usually without the anchor, it looks a little bit more hard-lined.
Most of it looks that way, but there are bits here and there, the panels, and I think that some of the characters tend to look a little more squat, but I also think he was sort of drawing them in the style of the time. Like, there was
one
just
thing he didn't lose is the hair. I mean, I guess it makes sense if it takes place in the 60s, but everyone's hair is really out of place.
I really tend to think that, like when I think of Alan Davis, what I think of is the word smooth.
Yes.
And that's probably more Mark Farmer than anything, but everything has a sort of liquidity to it.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And that's lacking a little bit, but either way, like as a piece, as a whole, like this accomplished its goal exactly. And I had a ton of fun reading it because it was not laden with anything other than, you know, making good old fashioned superhero comics.
Yeah. I mean, this was my pick of the week as well. I mean, I read this almost at the end of my stack, and I had a fairly large stack. I had at least 20 books this week. And, I was so happy reading this. First of all, it's a great era of Avengers. I know it's very early the run, but they'd almost had like three lineups by this point. Mm-hmm. And then the middle reveal is that the villain is Kang. And
like,
I think this is right after Kang's first appearance.
I'm not sure. I don't know that answer.
I was going to pull out my Avengers on the bus and check, but then things happened and I had to go to the doctor.
And then things happened, and I had to go to the doctor. Moving along.
Listen.
Leave him with that.
What hurt segment? I broke my toe. So, but it was just so much fun. Kang, they've just come from defeating Kang's Spider-Man robot. And so they've come back to Manhattan through a portal, and Kang is pissed. So he takes over the Hulk being one of the original members of the team, and has the Hulk attack the Avengers. So this Avengers team, I mean, you can see
he had the Hulk's heart because he's in the future,
right?
And he put it in a robot.
That's right. That's right. So this team, it's on the cover, but it's Captain America, Thor, Ant-Man, Wasp, and Iron Man. And I really love the Thor redesign. But there's a panel here where, you know, Thor is standing and spinning his hammer with the classic Kirby yellow booted costume, mm-hmm. and I was just like, yes.
Oh, that Thor costume back then. I just, like, that was one of the first designs that I ever recognized was a design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know that I had the word for it, but I thought, that looks cool. And it always has. Like it never, it kind of looks old now because we've been looking at all the new stuff, but it doesn't look dumb. It looks, those boots, those the things on top of the boots, whatever those are supposed to be, I always love that element.
You mean the wrap? I mean, it's like, those clearly, he's got like wraps around his legs, but that was never really drawn that way.
Or whatever that little flap is on the knees.
That everybody back then had big knee flaps. Just a lot of mud flying around the Marvel Universe.
I think if nothing else, like it just was a great design element to make those people stand out from regular people. I think,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's why Captain America and, you know, Hawkeye, they had those big boots.
Floppy boots.
It's just because it looked great. In a design sense, it broke things up. It didn't make them look like normal people. I don't know, but I was always attracted to it. Anyway, you know, you just have, you know, it's Hulk versus the Avengers, but mm-hmm. it's, you know, and it's in Manhattan, like it's squarely in the city, like they're in front of Radio City at one part. They go down, and one of the weirdest choices they made is that they needed to. I thought they were going to try to get Hulk away from people, but instead they lured him into the subway. Which I was like, that's an interesting public safety choice.
Well, first it was the Rockefeller Center ice rink
where
they tried to get him off balance, and then that's where they allow Iron Man to use his roller skates.
Which doesn't make sense, because it's ice, but move along.
No, but you're right. It had this ineffable feeling of early Marvel that I was struggling to put my finger on, but like the very specific time and place worked really well. You know, all of, you mentioned it before, like all of the middle-aged men that they, that, you know, they, the action flies by mentioned the war, like mm-hmm. every one of them. Captain America is still a man out of time here. The women all, you know, think he's handsome and they're all giggly around him. And the Wasp is just thirsty for everyone. And
that was really interesting too, because
very much like that.
If you had that character like that now, it's strange. But it was also strange then because she's very forward. So this is like a 60s version of a liberated woman.
Oh, for sure.
And I thought that was an interesting choice to just lean into it fully. And she's
cuckolded,
not
a cuckolded husband
yeah.
who will eventually explode.
They haven't ruined this Hank Pym yet.
Right. But I was so happy reading this. And Paul Levitz, one of the most underrated important people in the history of comics.
Yes.
This is really well written. I mean, this wasn't just a pure throwback nostalgia play. This was a really solid action, old school action comic that moves. You know, it really moves. It moves like crazy. There's always something going on this page. But it never sacrifices character or, you know, any kind of depth that you want. I mean, this is a very old school comic in which, you know, most comics now it's like conversations amongst characters, and I like it. But here it's just like action, 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 and the character stuff is revealed through the action. It was terrific.
That's true. Like, I'm remembering like when we were growing up and reading comics, like the characters were all pretty well defined, but done through here.
Mm-hmm.
Like done through what was happening, not them having conversations in the break room afterwards. So, like, Thor shows up out of nowhere, but he wasn't in the scene, and they've got the Hulk, and they want to talk to him, and he just smashes with his hammer, you know? And he's like, if it was a monster, he goes to Valhalla, you know?
Yeah.
He was an Avenger, we respect him, and that, again, that's just like a little character choice. It's like, we're not playing around here with this, all of them did that. All of them were really well defined as different people without sort of stopping to do it separately.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. I like that. And I made this pick really not in consideration of the Kang in here, because that was good. It wasn't anything that stuck with me, but as I sort of was flipping through it again last night when I was making my list, I was like, you had Kang in the thigh highs.
Mm-hmm.
And we had talked about, I don't remember if it was on the show or where, but like, you know, when Kangs don't have the arrogance, I guess the movie Kang doesn't seem to have the arrogance. Well, this one has it. You know, he's he's droll.
Yeah.
He's got his goblet. He's looking over things.
He smashes up his museum, which is just full of artifacts.
He can go back and get more.
He blew up the armor.
He is Kang. So if he does something, it is not wrong. It's just what Kang does.
He can also go get it again.
Yeah.
I was, when I finished this, it ends in a way, and it ends perfectly because, again, back then, even if stories continued, they ended, right? The issue comes to a third act end. And I thought, is that it? Like, is this a one shot? Because I didn't really look, because digitally you can see across the top, it says 1 of 5. But I didn't look at that, and I thought, oh, maybe this was just a one shot. That's a bummer. But then I turned the page and saw there's more. It was just a way of writing comics where you got a satisfying end to the story.
So the other thing that is interesting to me too, though, is that like I keep wondering, like, why do they do this? And I really don't mean it flippantly, but it is so against the tide of, you know, the MCU trends and how everything is happening. And I can't imagine this gets really big sales, but they're doing it.
Right.
I mean, there must be some kind of market for this because there's enough old people writing comics, people like us and older who, you know, have a romance and affection for this style of comic. But this, I don't know, somebody's doing.
I would
doing...
be thrilled if this was an ongoing. I was asking you and Ron in our Slack earlier in the week. There was that untold Tales of Spider-Man series in the 90s when we were in college that Kurt Busiek and Pat Olaf drew. That took place in between the issues of Amazing Spider-Man, and I would be thrilled with a book like this, with a quality like this that took place in between the issues of Avengers. I would buy that all day long.
Yeah.
Maybe just me and you, but I would Just putting it out and putting it into the universe, putting the thought out there in case it catches on.
I mean, the only thing about it is I think it's fun that it's special. And sure. I think that...
I mean, that comic went 24 issues, so it wasn't like it went 100 issues.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, having Paul Levitz on this was really, didn't see that coming. You know, like, because he's a DC, he's as DC
right.
as you get. I'm trying to remember if he ever did work on Marvel. But, you know, like the story is like he, you know, him or Jim Shooter, I don't remember if I'm making it up or it's both of them, but they both started writing comics as children.
Yeah, they were teenagers.
What a different time. He was 14 or something like that. He started writing comics. That's amazing.
So
and then he was head of all of DC Comics before they went and ruined everything.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, he's not as old as you think he is.
No.
He's 66. Which is crazy, considering when he stopped running DC, he was much younger than I thought. I was actually thinking about Paul Levitz in the shower earlier this week.
Well, go on.
I think looking back, when comic book historians look back, the his retirement or ouster or whatever it was from DC will be the most, one of the most important things that ever happened in comics that people don't talk about. Because everything at DC changed after that.
God, he was only in his 50s.
Yeah.
My conception of how old people are has changed rapidly in the past 10 years.
Well, you guys went and hung out with him that one day. I wasn't with you.
You weren't there?
I wasn't there.
Oh no.
Yeah.
That's such a great memory that like they were introducing us to everybody and like went into Paul Levitz's office and sat and chatted for a while.
Yeah, we had a press thing at DC and I wasn't there for whatever reason. Ugh. And you guys got to hang out with him in his office for a while.
The only thing, and this is about so many
still
of those,
very jealous. Yeah.
The only thing about so many of those iFanboy experiences that I know so much more now that would make me appreciate it so much more than then.
Yeah.
And I would have been able to have like better conversations. I don't mean for them. I mean for me. I mean for them also. But like, you know, like, oh, what a treasure trove of history,
right,
of the art and the people and the, you know, and I just know and appreciate so much more of it now. I'd love to have another shot at that. I think those days are over.
But it just, he held that ship together in a way that as soon as he left, it started to crumble. You know, in certain ways here and there, and more as time goes on. But
it's almost like more tonally than business wise. I don't even know how it is.
Well,
with
both.
That,
I mean, his whole thing was, in addition to the publishing, was to keep DC and autonomous, which is, you know, out the window immediately as soon as he left. Was more when Warner Brothers started sticking their fingers on the scale. But anyway, he's, you know, I thought he was much older because again, when he retired, I figured he wasn't in his 50s, but I guess he was. But he should write this book forever for me. Just for me. I was so thrilled by this book.
I by the way, when I mentioned earlier, like I think yesterday, I was like, make sure you read this.
Yeah.
And were you ever on the fence? Like, were you ever like, I'm not sure.
No. As soon as I saw it,
okay, that's what I figured.
Out, Dave, like, oh, God. And then and the lineup, I checked it out immediately.
When I went to try to pick my pick, it wasn't like apparent to me that like I was like, oh, I really enjoyed that, whatever. But then I looked at the rest of sort of everything else I read, and I was like, no, he's right. This is the pick.
I mean, there wasn't bad comics. I certainly enjoyed many of them. We're going to talk about
not at
them.
All.
But Danger Street Book 2 from Tom King and Jorge Fornes, Dave Stewart, Clayton Giles. I believe this is the team from, I was going to say Columbo, but that was not with Columbo. It was Rorschach. Man, if they did a Columbo book, I'd be the happiest guy reading a comic.
It's the only guy.
It'd be me and Tom reading his own book. So, this is by far Tom King's weirdest comic.
Wow.
By far. Not bad. Just not bad at all. It's just weird. It's a bunch of random characters from this anthology book that DC put out in the 70s. And we don't know I don't know what's happening yet.
So,
I don't know what the story is yet. We're still very much, you know, dropped into this world of these random DC characters. Most of them who are not even C-list characters. And it's somewhat confusing.
Yes, but the Dingbats of Danger Street, 1975,
yeah.
Jack Kirby, created, written, inked by Mike Royer, and for those of you who really like to get into it, were these four characters, Good Looks, Crunch, Non-Fat, and Bananas.
Yeah.
God, it's fun just saying that. and Tom King has decided to do a story that focuses on these kids. And if
and Lady Cop.
You do not need to know that.
No, not at all.
At all. But once I did, it made me enjoy it a lot more. But I think that was the thing. Like, part of the reason I'm bringing this up is because Danger Street 1 happened during the break. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it just because I had no idea what the fuck it was. And it was Michael Starman, the blue guy. And who's the...
Well, you have Warlord. He's with Warlord.
Warlord, that's it.
The guy who Mike Grell also did and looked exactly like Oliver Queen. So in the in the early 90s, it was very confusing.
And when he checked into the hotel under a fake name in this issue, number two, he said his name was Grell. And I got confused for a second because I hadn't oriented myself. I think it was on the first page. And I was like, wait, is Mike Grell a character in this? Because that's not beyond Tom to do.
No, no, no.
He said Frank Miller. They did Frank Miller before. So I was like, okay, we're doing this. I just love that I don't know what it is. And it's so, like, I mean, it feels like a Tom King book. I can tell, but it's not like any of the other ones. You know,
it has that strange air of mystery that was very, this does feel very much like Rorschach. It's not just because of the art, but it does have that oppressive nature of something big is happening, but we don't know what it is yet.
And there's all these things happening disparately, and they don't know how they connect, and you don't know what
you're supposed
to pay attention
to. The Creeper is one of the main characters,
and he's a Fox News pundit for a group of children who must be from Dingbats also. I don't know, but there's a group of four children who are like the Illuminati or whatever, they control the media, or at least their
Fox News
channel.
Tired I was this week. I was like, Tom King should do a New Gods book. Because the scene on Apocalypse of Dark Side and High Father was my favorite scene of the week.
That page was amazing.
Yeah.
Atlas, High Father shows up. Desaad is ripping him a new one. You're scum.
And this is not bullshit New Gods where Desaad looks like an alien. This is classic
Desaad.
The classic DC New Gods.
And he gives Darkseid news. Darkseid says, shut up. And Atlas is dead. And then Darkseid gets up and he gives fucking Highfather a hug. And it's a surprising hug because Highfather's hands are still down. I looked at this page a lot. His hands are still down. Like, what is happening?
He's not hugging him back. He's like, whoa.
What is this salty discharge?
And they call each other by their real names, not their superhero names.
And I thought that was nice. That was a New Gods, I think, where we sort of go back in time and we see who they are, you know, before. I don't know what this is. I don't know what to make of it, but I really enjoy it. I really dug that first issue, but I couldn't have told you anything about, where it came from. I hadn't read any of the source material, but you kind of know, like, oh, it's in these caring hands, So
and
go with it.
Starman and Warlord running around with Dr. Fate's helmet, which accidentally killed one of the Dingbats in the first issue when they tried to
Metamorpho's dead too, right?
Like they were trying to use it to, I forget what they're trying to do with it, summon somebody or open up a portal. They were trying to do something mystical with it, and it killed the kid by accident. And so that's what Lady Cop is investigating, the death of the Dingbat. The words as they come out of your mouth sound dumb, but
yep. That's great, though. That is a wonderful comic book thing. Like, you'll be taking it seriously, and you'll say it out loud. And it's like,
that's
stupid.
It out loud.
No,
doing the show. I just don't know what it is yet. And I just, which is not necessarily a bug. It can be a feature. And if we know anything, at least we can trust to know that Tom King has a plan. And it usually all works out in the end.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to more. So going back again to the history of the Avengers, Monica Rambeau, Photon number 2, are you reading this?
No, I saw it, chose not to.
So the cover of this particular issue is a throwback to the Roger Stern, Sal Buscema era of Avengers, and it features Photon, who was Captain Marvel at the time, Captain America, Black Knight, bearded, armored Thor from that era, She-Hulk, and Dr. Druid. And this comic strip written by Eve Ewing and drawn by Yvonne Fiorillo and Luca Maresca. And she gets a version of the Beyonder has come back and sort of transports her back to that era. So the whole time she's with that team, as if it's that team and not like the modern day versions of the characters. I don't know what's going on in this book necessarily, but that was one of my favorite eras of that team, because it was, you know, prime late 80s. I was like 10 or 11. So that's like, we were really getting into reading comics, and that was one of my favorite Avengers teams. And so just to spend some time with them again was really fun. And again, this is the classic Thor. So like, you know, two comics this week with a classic Thor costume. And I don't know what's going on here, but I enjoy it. Eve Ewing is giving Monica a bit of a more realistic dialect. She doesn't just talk like a white guy, but it is a little jarring because she doesn't talk like that anywhere else.
Sure.
So you're just like, wait, are they really, you know, are they really like turning into this like they did with Luke Cage? So I don't know if that's going to continue on anywhere else, but
probably not. Yeah. Same thing with Miles Morales. I keep trying to find somebody to make him like. I thought that. Oh my God, Saladin.
Ahmed.
Saladin Ahmed. I thought he sort of took that in a direction, obviously, to be much more authentic than Bendis was. But whoever's writing that issue now, I'm sorry, I don't remember the name because it's not on the rundown. But like, they kicked it up a notch in terms of sounding more like a kid, as I understand it. But it sounds different than he. This is like the third voice for him, which I don't think is a bad thing. But it tends to never be consistent because the person writing that book, like when he shows up in Jason Aaron's book, you know, bless him, but he's not doing that same voice.
And also at the end. Dr. Voodoo? No, that's wrong.
Major Voodoo. I don't know.
Captain Voodoo? Voodoo.
Captain Voodoo. Sure.
It's been a long week. It's been a long week.
Yeah. I thought this was Jericho the not practice round.
Jericho Drum. He showed up. He shows up.
And he's Dr. Voodoo.
Dr. Voodoo. This didn't sound right in my head.
I understand. You know? It's, you know why? Because he was Dr. Voodoo originally, and then he became the Sorcerer Supreme, and then you were like, wait, so what do I call him there? Was he doctor because of that? And then now he's in charge of the school. He's Professor Voodoo.
I call him Commander Voodoo. That's just what I call him.
Chairman Voodoo. Chairman what is the, Voodoo. He's Dean Voodoo. That's what he is. Dean Voodoo. Yeah.
Oh, boy. John Belushi throws food at him. So anyway, this was fun, I'm especially fun for an old school.
I'm a magic
fan.
Zit.
So I think actually you would enjoy this. I know you were also a fan of that era of Avengers comics, and she is a good character. She is still the person I picture when I hear the name Captain Marvel.
Really?
It was just because of my formative years in comics. She was Captain Marvel until after college.
Mm-hmm. You know? I don't like the name. Wait, she's not. She's Photon. I thought she was Spectrum.
She's. I don't know. She's Photon. But you know, if you think about it, in the 80s, Monica was Captain Marvel, and then in the 90s, Carol was Warbird.
I remember who I think when I think of Carol, I still think of Warbird.
Miss Marvel. And it wasn't until fairly recently in the historical timeline that she became Captain Marvel.
She makes a great Captain Marvel, and the sort of design of that suit, like, you know, original Captain Marvel's great. Like, that's a great evolution of that character. Warbird.
Which one are you talking
Warbird,
about?
I'm talking about Carol Danvers.
Okay.
Like, I knew her as Warbird first in the black sort of leotard with the lightning, which is a fine design, but it was sort of silly. Like, I don't see her in thigh highs in a high cut one piece. It just
on a Saturday
but her
night,
being
you know.
Captain Marvel works really well. Did Monica Rambeau when she was Captain Marvel on the Avengers, she had the white and black outfit, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what she has in this?
She has a version of it. They didn't put her back in her original suit, which they should have, but they
had those wingy things that went from the wrist to the things. That was a big thing for a while in the late 80s.
We see her at one point in like a kind of a flashback in that outfit, but for the most part, she's in a more modern version of it. Anyway, she's still the person in my head. If you say Captain Marvel, I think of her with her, you know, with the white mask and leading the team at the time.
Cool.
Anyway, Daredevil 656.
There's a whole thing going on in Daredevil.
Yeah.
How are you sitting with it? How do you feel about it?
You know, I mean, I'm enjoying it as a comic.
I agree.
How else could I be enjoying it, Connor?
I like it as a hoagie.
Daredevil has been off in his sort of bubble for so long under Chip Zdarsky that, you know, whatever. They turned him into this sort of, you know, hero for God, this army of, you know, this God's army that he's made out of. It was in some sort of Kunlun-esque, you know, pocket temple. And now he's going up against Frank Castle's army for the devil. And, you know, sure. At this point, why not?
You're not reading The Punisher, right?
No. But I've been listening to you talk about it, so I know it's, you know, I've been following that for the most part.
I think in both of these books, it's the same thing. Where on paper, if you had to tell me what was happening, I would be like, I don't want to read that. But because they are both leaning into them entirely and committing, like there's no winking in either of these books,
right?
It's they're super dramatic and serious. And I think that's the deal with Daredevil specifically, is like, I keep thinking, I was like, I shouldn't really like this, but I do find it compelling. I want to know where it goes. I want it to be over eventually, you know, but yes. I like it better than like when the hand was in Hell's Kitchen and like they had the big temple. Like, it's better than that. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand where he's coming from here in a way, and his like soul searching. That's all very authentic Daredevil. So they're also not. What was one of the books? Remember when Hawkeye was Ronin and like all the Avengers came after him and they were just constantly dealing with that? Like, that doesn't seem to be happening in this. This is just Daredevil and this group of villains versus the Hand, and it's off to the side. And so we're just telling that story. And it's the same thing over in The Punisher, which is a little, it's interesting and it's well done, but you know, it's not my favorite thing, but I keep reading it.
Does the Punisher have Thin Fang Foom on his side? Is that what that is in the last page?
Oh, I got to look
at it.
That's
just a dragon. That's not Thin Fang Foom.
I think it's just a dragon. Yeah. It's not Thin Fang Foom.
All these dragons running around the Marvel these days.
Yeah, but does he have pants?
Daredevil and Elektra are married. Daredevil's, you know, comes back to New York with his gang of trying to reform old villains, including Stiltman, to stop some illegal evictions. Like, it's very much feels like ground level, old school, left wing, you know, Superman comics, you know, like the corrupt, you know, landlords and cops who are keeping the little guy down, that kind of thing.
With the crushing Catholic guilt, which really is the secret sauce of Daredevil, that Superman would be like, dude, get over it. Right. Superman like would be like, I don't really know how to relate to what you're going through, Matt.
I did like that, you know, there was one of the guys who was like, I didn't sign up for this sort of indefinite war. I got a kid. Mm-hmm. I got to leave. And of course, something bad happens to him.
Sure.
Which makes total dramatic sense.
Something happened to his daughter, right?
Yeah, like, that's bad for him. Right. He goes back, his daughter's gone. But like,
so now it's Matt's fault. I think this is vendetta.
It's well done.
It is. And it's just strange enough that it keeps me compelled when I think maybe I don't like it. But it's good. It's really good. And that's the other bit. Also, he looks really cool in his big beard and his hood. I haven't been reading this like, you know what he needs to be in his classic costume? I didn't think that during this ever. Because it would be weird.
I do think his hair needs to be red, but I understand that they are leaning more towards brown because of the movies, but whatever, that's stupid. Hey, let's take a quick break here and talk about how you can support the show. Thank you for supporting the show. We mentioned this briefly last week. That was the moment Josh had to leave, so I was a little bit distracted. So let's get back into it this week. We'd like to thank the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. They really help the show keep going. They help get the bills paid, help make the time worth it. And we have been undergoing a elaborate redesign of the patron rewards that we spent a lot of time changing the going through the stretch goals, adding new ones, only to find that they are eliminating stretch goals. So we'll go figuring out what's happening there. But if you are considering being a patron, we've switched up the stretch goals. We have eliminated ones that were irrelevant. Like, you know, we got, you know, took out the YouTube videos because we did that already. We moved some things down into a safe spot, so the media splodes are now pretty safe. We've added some new fun ones. I think the next stretch goal is TV coverage. That's the same as last time. But then we have some more immediately after that. We changed the numbers so they're a bit more attainable. So you can check all those out at patreon.com/ifanboy. We do appreciate everyone who does that. We hope we make it fun for everyone. We hope we make the experiences fun, the community worth it. They have the Discord channel server thing, and they have the Facebook group. And they also have the patron hangouts. And we had our patron Dave Carr mentioned, hey, you should really hit the hangouts harder because it's really fun and people might enjoy those. So once a month, me and Josh and our original co-host Ron get together on our live stream just for the patrons, and we hang out for an hour. It's kind of like this show, but super, super, super loose and goofy. And we talk about comic stuff. Sometimes talk about comics news if it happens. But sometimes we just talk about movies or whatever, or just bust each other's balls for an hour because that's what we do. But it's a really fun thing.
Yeah. It's totally kind of freewheeling. It's like, what are we going to talk about? Which I handle better on a thematic level than maybe some other folks. But it's just a YouTube link that the patrons get. You can go back and watch them later if you can't get there live, but there's a very active sort of chat going on that we're reading.
Yeah, there's a chat room we take questions. Like, it's
Connor does amazing polls.
Yeah, like they're all archived for the patrons. Only the patrons can get to them. So if you join up, you can go back and watch like 5 years worth of hangouts. I often start a pre-show with some of friends of the show, like Mike Romo or Gordon the intern, or Ryan shows up, where we hang out for a couple hours before the hangout, just because we started doing that during the pandemic when we weren't able to socialize with anybody, and we keep doing it as a way to sort of hang out with each other for an hour a month. Yeah. But it's really fun. It's one of the most fun things we do, and it's actually the next one is next weekend. So if you're listening to this show as it comes out, this coming Saturday is the next patron hangout. So if you want to, you know, check it out and, you know, be a patron, you can be one for as little as $1 a month. It's really fun. Hopefully we make it worth it. And we really enjoy it. The patrons become an integral part of the show, and we do enjoy having them around. But as we said, we revamped the stretch goals. And there's a second part to our revamp, which is just taking longer to implement. And hopefully it'll implement in the next few weeks. It requires a lot more decision and just didn't work. And my breaking my toe in the middle of the week didn't really help things. FMO.threadless.com is our t-shirts. FMO.com/support is our PayPal link. FMO.com/Amazon is our Booksplode books. And Bookshop.org is our partner that we use to help support local bookstores. That's how I do my book ordering now, all through Bookshop.org. You'll find those links on the website where they are appropriate.
The Ones, number two, which is a weird title, and I can't quite get used to it. This is a new series from Dark Horse Comics by Brian Michael Bendis and Jacob Edgar, the storytellers, but they're the writer and artist. I like it. I can't put my finger on it yet.
It's very strange.
It's really strange, and it's very, you're in it. You're in it without getting a ton of explanation. It's been all like, it's two issues, and I feel like a ton of things have happened, and there's a lot of information, and I don't have real hold of all the characters. There's at least two women who I can't separate
exactly
from one another.
Same, yeah. This is issue three, by the way.
Is it three? Okay, that makes more sense. Yes, it is. Okay, right. But I am enjoying it.
Yeah, it's one of those classic. I mean, I don't know who came up with the idea, but it feels like a classic Bendis idea in that what would happen with a team up of the people who are considered to be the one, like, you know, in the story, in the classic adventure story, they are the one who will save us, you know, the Buffy the Vampire Slayer, or, you know, the one who was deemed the champion, right? And this is like a whole team of them throughout the years.
Neo.
The old guy, he was the one, you know, 30 years ago. And then there's a new, you know, so it's like this interesting dynamic of people who were all at one point chosen to save humanity, who have been brought together by this guy who dresses like it's still 1984. And they have to, in this issue, they're fighting the devil, who can't exactly attack them directly. And so he has to use proxies to attack. Like, it's all very interesting and well thought out.
Yeah.
Like, you're right. I just don't know exactly what it is that's happening here, but I do enjoy reading it.
It feels like, I mean, people who haven't been around for a long time might not remember, but early Bendis was a revelation. It was this guy who had a very specific voice, but did all these different types of stories. And then you've seen since he got big with Marvel, he's done other series and things like that, and they were pretty entertaining or good. But like, this feels like it's his wheelhouse in a way that a lot of the other stories haven't. I mean, I couldn't explain Pearl to you. I've read all of it. You know, I'm not sure I understand what it is, what it's supposed to be. I get right. what this is, and I feel like it's fun. I feel like they're having fun with it.
Yeah, Jacob Edgar is terrific.
Perfect.
His cartooning is really strong. Other than that one, and I don't know if it's his issue, but like, there's the two redheaded women who one of them wears a ponytail, one doesn't. That's the only real one of them. Slightly has the red is slightly more red. One is slightly more pink hair, but otherwise I get really confused.
There's a lot of characters. A lot of characters.
Yeah, there's like 15 ones.
But it's worth it.
I think that's a fun idea.
I mean, that's the joke. The ones. That's right away. That title is a joke. It's not great for SEO, but there you go.
I enjoy it though. So it finally happened on X-Men 18 with Jerry Duggan and art by C.F. Villa with colors by Matt Miller. It's a little rhyming team.
Hey, Miller, via Mia.
So as you know, Josh, as you've been listening to the adventures of Fuck Island, is that the X-Men can't die, right? They get resurrected when they die. And so basically at this point, almost every major X-Men that you know is a clone of itself. Like almost all the original X-Men are dead. I'm talking about like not the five original. I'm talking about all the X-Men. Like they've all been cloned at some point. So that seems weird to me, but whatever. So in this issue, well, several issues ago, we had a story where Laura, Wolverine 2, went off with this other character, Sync, and they were on this like 100 years long adventure. And at the end of it, Laura was killed. And so they resurrected her, you know, back to the young Laura again, so they could have her running around. Well, in this issue, the old Laura wasn't actually dead, so now there are two. So now we've actually run into the problem of what if we've resurrected somebody, but they didn't actually die. And so now there's an old Laura and a young Laura running around. And
I mean,
so that's
Right, it's one of those things like this problem had to happen, and it hasn't happened in so long that you let your guard down. Like, you shouldn't be able to do this. That's a problem.
Right. So this has been seeded for a while, like as this thing that could happen. And now it hasn't, and you know it's not like an accident. Beast, who apparently is like a bad guy now, I don't know. It's happening in other books I'm not reading. Where he's like, "So you fucked up," and so now what does that mean? You know, for this whole situation. Also, now there's three Wolverines. We have to figure this out.
I really like Laura in the books that she's in.
She's a great
character.
Like,
I think in Captain Marvel, like that story that's going on now, they're all in space. She's rad. Like, she is what Wolverine sort of used to be. But I don't even know what Logan is.
We can't have every character have two versions.
We can't call them by the same name.
Yeah. So figure this out. It's not just Marvel. It's Marvel and DC. They're both doing it. And you know, there's the original white guy version, and then there's the new version, which is either a minority or a woman or both. And they all have the same names, and they have to figure this out. Just change the names.
And it's cool. We're
somebody
not complaining.
Name. No, I'm good just saying, give they're characters. Great characters. Just give them a different name.
Yes. Even if you have to change
three Wolverines.
Even if you have to change the name of the original person, fine, which is dumb, but fine.
Call him Logan. I'm Logan now. You're Wolverine.
Yeah, he passes the mantle. That works. Yeah, she's
great.
You're
the captain now.
I really, really dig her in Captain Marvel.
She's great.
The worst page of this entire week for me was at the end of Predator 6, which wraps up this arc. They announced Predator number 1, and they said, "Come back," by Ed Brisson and Netho Diaz. Now, no disrespect, but I knew when this volume ended that we would be done with Kev Walker, and I hate it. I don't know what people think.
Why do number 1? Why?
So now,
now we have Predator Legacy numbering? Oh, my God. Gonna have an aneurysm.
This six issues has been super fun. Issue is exactly what I want it to be. And I just love Kev Walker.
So the worst page for you was the ad for the next issue?
Well, when they said that Kev Walker was gone.
Okay. I thought it was an actual story.
Because I knew at the end of the sixth issue, I thought, and they said, "We're starting over number 1. I go, "Oh, he's out of here," because he never hangs around. That's part of what makes him special. Like, he'll do 5 or 6 issues. He doesn't do long runs. And that's his prerogative. It's fine. But I was just like, "Oh," because that was the draw for me. And I think that he nailed it. I'm sure that Kev Walker doesn't listen to this, never has. But if anybody knows him, he has one big, big fan. and it's me. And well, I, you know, one. Like, I mean, there might be others. He might be very popular. I have no idea. But I know that that's a name. Ever since I saw him for the first time on Thunderbolts with Jeff Parker forever ago, I was like, oh, this is the guy that I want to see do comics. And so, you know, when you get a little six issues and the story's fun, then you enjoy it because it'll be over soon.
Just by coincidence, I was, you know, flipping around channels this week and I came across the original Predator, which I hadn't seen in forever. And I watched about an hour of it and it was so good. It was just the best. I watched up until the part I was waiting for, which is the part where the one character takes his shirt off and cuts his own chest on the tree. That was the part that our buddy in college used to always make do bits about. And then I was satisfied. Then I went off to other things. But it's fun. This was a fun comic. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad I read it. I'm glad you talked it up enough for me to check out.
Real good.
Did you read Lazarus Planet Alpha number one?
I did, but you know, all the names. There were continuing stories. I enjoyed it, but as I got to the end, like continued in Lazarus Planet every Greek letter. I went, I don't want that.
Yeah, so it's a little, I'm going to read the main story. It's a little mini Mark Waid event happening. First of all, I think Ricardo Federico is a great artist. I think he was a terrible choice for this book.
I don't think he
was the right artist for it. He's a great artist. I thought he was great on the Superman story, but he didn't have the superhero-y, gosh-y nature you need for a big event book. The characters are kind of all off model, so it was a little weird. It just didn't. Work for me.
Did he do DMZ?
Oh, I don't know.
All right, that's a long time ago. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I think you're right. Like it made it more like it was trying to be a serious book than what should be a kind of a silly book.
Yeah,
and I don't mean silly in a bad way. I mean in the best way.
And the challenge here is, and I've been talking up Mark Waid's Return to DC like crazy. The Batman vs. Robin book was fine. Like, it was okay. And this is sort of an extension of that. Plus, it adds in, like, Monkey Prince, which I dropped because it just wasn't good. And
I kind of liked how we fit in with this one. I stopped reading it, too, I think. But now that, like, the origin things is sort of sorted, I like all the sort of Chinese mysticism that sort of is mixed in with this weird, weird fucking demon story. And I actually liked the backstory.
It ties into World's Finest, and it ties into Batman versus Robin, which is part of this, I guess, whole event. So I guess what's going to happen is this Lazarus pit is going to explode, and it's going to alter many of the DC heroes, so like change their powers, change like things about them. So that's the whole thing we're doing here.
Ricardo Burchielli was the one who drew DMZ. So,
well, Italians are all the same.
There I go mixing up my Italian artists again. We all the same with you, huh?
So those are the books we wanted to talk about. But at Patreon.com, the pages we mentioned earlier, every patron gets a vote to add a book to the rundown. It's their contribution to the show. And this week, the patron pick, by a wide margin, it was a old school patron pick beatdown. The winner was Black Cloak number one from Image Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, with art by Meredith McLaren and letters by Becca Carey. And this is a oversized, it was like 60 pages. I was reading it. I was like, this should be over. And it wasn't. Sort of a fantasy cop story by Kelly Thompson and Meredith McLaren. And I read it well before the patron pick. I was already on my radar because it's Kelly Thompson. It opens up with not a cutaway so much, but a really cool shot of this town. And there's the black cloaks are the cops of the town. And there's a dead body of a royal, and the cop who's investigating it is used to be engaged to the dead body. I thought this was fun. I really did enjoy this. I really did.
I wasn't sure if you'd like it just from a concept. There's a lot.
I liked it.
It's one of those books that, the concept, the setup does not seem new, but the execution was very strong.
Yes. And I liked Meredith McLaren's art. It had a sort of a whimsical
very
feel.
Very, very unique.
Yeah.
I mean, it worked. It was good cartooning, but I couldn't tell you who this looks like. It reminds you a little of a bunch of people. But as a package, it was like, I was like, this isn't a new thing.
Yeah, it didn't have, like, a lot of new artists, especially young ones, often have sort of a web comic-y feel. This didn't mm-hmm. have that feel. Mm-hmm. It just felt, it had a little bit of Fiona Staples in it. But a more cartoony version of that. Mm-hmm. Actually, now that I'm looking at it, it feels very much like Saga inspired. But I thought it really worked to ground the story and make it fun. This is like the opposite of the Ricardo Federico problem.
Sure.
And I didn't even mind things like them having like our kind of coffee cups. Like it was sort of like, you know, there were sort of elements here and there that were like Earth, you know.
The setup is that, isn't it? Is this Earth or is it, because this is like after the last war. It's also post-apocalyptic. And so the city is the last city on Earth. And so you don't really know what you're going to find in there, but you've got different species and races and cultures and everything all mixed in, and it's stratified.
It's the city of Kyros. So who knows where that takes place?
Yeah, it doesn't really say. For some reason, at the very beginning, I thought it was Earth, but I don't think.
I mean, there's mermaids and there's, you know,
and some of the characters are magical or whatever, and some aren't.
It's a fantasy world,
totally.
But it's like
techno fantasy.
She's, you know, we've said this for years. Kelly Thompson's an incredibly funny writer. So this was fun and funny in addition to being like a, you know, a solid cop story where she's got to investigate several murders and has to go see her old family and question them. And they, you know, they're the ruling class. And so they don't like that. And, you know,
one of the things I like about Kelly Thompson is that she has a voice and she has a style, and she could, if she wanted to, lean into her cute, funny dialogue, wacky situations, people. But she, I mean, like something like this shows me, it's like she's really pushing herself to do, and you've seen it in Captain Marvel and other stuff too, but like the world building and the sort of, you know, there's a lot here. There's a lot of work that was done beforehand that is, you know, isn't laid out entirely in the book, but you can tell it's there. The skeleton was put in place. And I just think, I really like watching an artist who I like, a writer, you know, get stronger, and you just see them like pushing themselves to find more things that they're good at and do different stuff. It's good.
I mean, to be fair, it helped that she had basically three times the pages, so that by the end of it, we were really, you know, invested. We were deep into the story. We got to learn a lot about the world. If it's just been the first 20 pages, it may not have been as strong.
That's smart. 50. I mean, we say that all the time.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it's a negative. I'm just saying that she had that benefit of this was an oversized book. I think it's like 54 pages by the end of it. So she had like 2.5 times as much real estate to really. And some of these books we get from Image that are fantasy books, they don't have enough real estate to really hook you. So this one did really, really hooked you. It was a smart move by them to make it oversized.
Yeah. And she, you know, it's like you got somebody who has the clout to get that done, I think, and it's a really smart move. The other thing is this, you know, on a typical Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday, whichever, you know, like a 60-page book can sometimes be a showstopper. You're just like, ugh. And I just didn't like, I got to the end and I was like, I want to know more. Like, I didn't feel like, and it wasn't that it was weak. It wasn't like a bunch of splash pages. It wasn't, it just, you know, you were living in this world. You were learning as you kept going. You were figuring out this society, this character's backstory. I mean, nothing really new, I don't mean this in a bad way, but new or terribly inventive in where they are and what they're doing. It's all going to feel like stuff you've seen before. But again, the execution was really strong.
Yeah. And I think it helps that Kelly Thompson's dialogue is punchy, you know? So, we talked earlier about Avengers and how it moved. This book really moved as well, even though it's a police procedural in a fantasy world. It's the dialogue's all punchy and fun. So you really do fly through it. Like you said, I didn't feel like this took forever to read at all. When I saw it was like big, I was like, oh, and so I kept reading.
Sometimes I just check. I'm like, oh, where am I in this? And I was like, oh, 60. That's a long one. And I was like, I wasn't annoyed by it. I mean, you made the point, and I think it's true that had this art been more serious fantasy, more like that Ricardo.
Ricardo.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just a choice, like, or like Andre Bresson or something like that. I wouldn't have liked it as much. It would have felt too heavy, too syrupy, too, you know, wearing robes and
self-serious.
Like, yes, exactly. That, and so that changes the context a little bit, and it makes it work. And also, like, the type of natural dialogue and the way that people are talking doesn't work as well when it looks like, you know, Stefan Sedgwick. Like, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing. And then my one last point, and this is really not so much about the book, but it's true. Sometimes when people come up in indie comics, they have these great ideas and they do stuff, but they're not ready to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when people really make their bones in mainstream comics, that by the time they come around the other way and do their indie comic, like, their chops are down. So that thing that we're talking about, that laying out the world, that lack of too much exposition, mm-hmm. that way that it flows, that things are paced properly, that really comes across. Like you cut your teeth, you get your chops doing mainstream comics because you have to.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of the arc that from the Great Debate 10 years ago or more, mm-hmm. was about the Bendis Kirkman thing. You know, you make your chops, make your bones, make your fan base at the big two, and then go do your own stories. And by then you're good enough. Mm-hmm. You have the skills and the craft down to make it a really fun and hopefully great, you know, indie book.
Yeah. To be fair, that works from an artistic standpoint. The economics have changed once again.
Listen, things are changing all the time.
Sure.
Black Cloak, number one, Image Comics, sticking with it.
Yes.
Yes. Ratings.
Solid 4.
I'm going to give it 4.875.
Wow.
Repeating. I don't know if you can do that.
Oh.
I don't know if that's a thing or not.
That's fine.
Patreon.com/fanboy. Thanks to every patron who votes to add a book to the rundown. It was super fun to watch the votes come in. A lot more people voted this week because last week it was a kind of a slow week. So when it's a light week, we get fewer votes. When it's a heavy week of comics, get more votes. And that's always fun to see. But if you're a patron at the $5 or higher level, you get a superpower live on the show, like Patrick. Patrick's power, Josh, is that he has a magical satchel. And in that satchel exist many hats. And when he pulls a hat out of the satchel and puts it on, he is imbued with the skills and the abilities of whatever that hat is. For instance, he could pull a fireman's hat out of the bag, and he has the skills to fight a fire. He knows how to fight one.
Drive a large vehicle.
He has the tools. He has the talent.
Pole sliding.
Or if he pulls out like an army hat, he has the tools of a soldier. You know, he can plan battlefield tact. Like, whatever the hat is, he pulls out, he has that ability.
He's aware of many hats, is what you're saying.
He's aware of many hats. They're all in the satchel. He could pull a old newsy flat cap out, and now suddenly he knows all about selling papes.
Questions.
Yeah.
The satchel is like a magical device. It's not like he's hauling around a gigantic bag.
He's not holding Santa's bag behind him. He's
like,
got
just like, hold on. Yeah. When he pulls a hat out, is there intention to it, or does he get what he gets?
Well, he can try to root around in it, but, you know, it's almost like Dial H for Hero. But right.
That's what I was.
In moments of great need, sometimes the things that you need appear.
Right.
And
sometimes it's like one of those Burger King visors, and he's like, motherfuck.
But he makes the best quarter pounder with cheese you ever had.
That's not Burger King.
No, that's not
at
all.
It's a Whopper.
Also, neither would that be the best. But you know what I'm saying? He has, you know, many things come out of that bag, and they imbue him with the power of the hat.
Okay. It's new. We've never done that.
No, I hope not.
That's the only thing I'm going for now. It's like, that's not something we've done before. That's different. That's good.
So, Patrick, thanks for being a patron. Patreon.com/iFanboy. $5 or higher, you get your own superpower live on the show. Thank you very much. Let's do at least one audience question, maybe two, depending on how fast we get.
Let's start with the second one, because I think that was interesting. We just sort of had led to it, and then we'll do the other one.
Scott H. from, I think he's from Portland, Oregon, one of our regular emailers. In episode 860, that was last week, you discussed Mosley, and Josh briefly mentioned the difference between how Boom and Image operate regarding how creators make their money and finance their books. I think Josh also mentioned in a previous episode that either Boom or Oni have editors, where an Image book doesn't necessarily have an editor. Are you able to elaborate on those differences a bit more?
Sure. And I'll just preface that my information could be slightly out of date, but this is generally, well, you know, I'm not as plugged in as I maybe once was, but let's just say that Boom and Oni isn't Oni. Okay. Oni's separate. Boom is Archaea now, though. Also,
Boom's Archaea. Oni is Lion's Forge.
Right. Okay. So they have a typical publisher setup. So there's a editor in chief or executive editor. There's an editor and possibly an assistant editor on a book. So they're setting things up. Somebody comes to them with a pitch. They put the book together. They budget it. They're artists, writers. They're paid upfront for their work. There could be revenue sharing or not, depending. I think most of the smaller ones probably have some sort of.
Those deals are all changing constantly.
Yeah. So, like royalties on the book, ancillary, licensing, whether it becomes a movie or a TV show. The smaller publishers need those. I mean, they're operating on the fact that some of these things will be optioned and turned into bigger things. That's part of their value proposition, as I understand it. Yep. Anyway, the people will have page rates. A Boom, certainly Oni, those page rates are not going to be equal to what you would get necessarily.
And I think it's important to note that Oni especially went through a lot of changes in the last year. So I don't even know this information about Oni.
Yeah, probably not. Wrong. So let's say we're talking about Boom, or IDW or Dynamite or any of that stuff. And I'm sure that there's different levels of infrastructure to all of these things. But sure, the basic idea
the deal
is that
gets to Dynamite. It's not going to be the deal that some random person gets to Dynamite.
Right. And also like how much, how many editors or how big the structure is. And Marvel and DC are pretty solidified, and there's levels and levels. But you get a deadline, your stuff's got to come in on time. The books come out regularly. It's backed by a corporate structure. Typically and historically, Image, and there's no one else like this that I can think
They're
of.
They're unique.
It's a creator. It's the idea is that it's creator owned, and so that you go to them. They have a pretty small staff.
Image probably has about 10 employees, and they're almost all on the business side. There's no editorial staff.
There's a marketing person. There's a digital person. Yeah. But basically, there's one guy, Eric Stevenson, and he makes the decision whether he wants to do your book or not. And you go to him and you say, "This is what it is. This is what it looks like." For most people, you're bringing a package. You're saying, "I'm going to bring my artist and my colorist and my letterer and my writer, and this is what we're going to make for you," and they say no or go, and then you get I don't want to speak to the sort of how it works, but you don't get money up front.
No So
generally
with Image, they take the first it used to be $3,500. I don't know what it is anymore, but they take the first X dollars to cover their costs, and then every dollar after that goes to the creative team. And so if you see in it, but also everyone who works in the actual book is comes out of the creative team. So if you see an editor on Image Books, and some Image Books have them, that means that whoever started the book, the writer, the artist, whoever, they're paying them out of their pocket. Mm-hmm. And that editor's fee is coming out of the profits of the book. There's no one at Image who's an editor. There's no
Staff editors.
They can't put an editor on your book. If you see an editor, and very rarely do you see an editor, but sometimes you do. They're being paid out of pocket by the creative team. So there's no.
Or as part of their get a deal to get part of the kickback. I had Will Dennis on the show a couple times, and this is what he does. He's a freelance editor. Now he doesn't just do Image, but he does Image and he does the Comixology. I think he's on it. Anything Scott Snyder does.
Yeah.
Will Dennis is probably that job changes. Editor is a very flexible thing, but it's keeping trains running. It's making sure that people are getting stuff in together, all the people who need to be talked to, so the creators can focus on the creator part. Sometimes they give them the creative direction or try to help in that way. Sometimes they don't. But it is not part of the publisher structure. It's an outside thing. Now, there have been times in the past, because if someone is big enough, I know that people have been advanced from Image because so and so can, like a big name person, if they really want to do, like an artist specifically wants to dedicate themselves for doing a book to Image, they can't wait for the back end on it. They need to have an income. And so they'll
take
that chance on it.
It's a very rare occurrence.
Yes. I think it used to happen a lot more than it does now. But that's an exception. That's not sort of how it goes.
You're betting on yourself entirely. We're going to make this comic. We're going to incur all the costs from our own pocket, and we're going to hope that we sell enough to make it back and make a profit. Whereas other companies, you might get a small page rate to help the production. So that's
historically,
I'm trying to remember what we talked about last week.
Image has no third party rights. So if your Image comic book turns into a movie, They don't necessarily own
I think,
any.
I believe that's changed, but also.
Yeah, it's not ownership, though. It's like points, I think.
Right, but, and I'm not entirely sure. Again, it's been a long time.
Exactly.
It used to be everything. The creators owned everything, so the image didn't get any piece of anything. The only difference is that I'm aware of is with trade paperback sales, I believe Image takes a percentage of that.
Right.
After the
initial fee.
The initial fee, they also take a piece of the trade sales. They make their money on the trade sales.
And I think the trade sales, it's like anything else, like basically whether they continue series or not at Marvel and DC has to do with the issue sales.
Yeah.
But the trade sales are a bigger part of the Image pie.
That's
and so
they make their piece. So they, that's
yeah,
what
so, yeah. So the cancellation. So
they wet their beak.
Yeah. Hey, you know, you get a little piece. You know, it's there's nothing else like it. It's really interesting. I'm sure because of the way that the organization is set up, it's very flexible. I'm sure things change around. They make different kinds of deals. But at the heart of it, it's just a different, you
and
know.
That's how it was. I don't know if that's how it is now, but that's how it was. And that's probably how it kind of, I mean, they're totally. So if you're making Mosley at Boom, you're probably getting a little bit of money to help make the book. Whereas if that team had made it an Image, they would have been totally taking up all the risk on their own, which is harder on the artist than anybody.
And like, I don't know what the case is now, but I know at one point in the past, like if you were making a book at Oni, for example, and you were the artist of that book, you're getting, I knew people who got $50 a page total.
Which is nothing.
That's pencils, inks, colors, and lettering. Like, that's what they had to go. They were getting a page rate, but it wasn't terribly livable.
No, that's not nothing. That's horrible.
Yeah. And you know, God, I don't know what page rates look like, but, you know, a successful writer can make, you know, $200 or $300 a page, you know, just from, and then, the, you know, some of the artists, they probably make a ton of money or,
yeah,
you know, they can.
The artist page rate tends to be higher, but yeah, that's, yeah.
That's at Marvel or DC. If you go to Boom, well, it depends, but, yeah. But when you talk about cover prices and you talk about, you know, the economics of it, like, you know, you got a small audience and you got to pay for these expert
craftsmen.
That's
the thing. Every time cover price comes up, people say, well, why don't they just use cheaper material? And it's never the material. It's the price of the people making the comic. It's always the cost of the comic.
And when you put it that way, it starts to get harder to complain about it because, you know, it's a really small audience now and you've got people just super talented, you know, and they want to make a living. If you can't make a living doing this, like maybe when you're in your 20s, you can do it for a while, but eventually you're like, I can't keep doing this. It's not worth it. So they gotta be paid, which they should be.
Daniel from Texas, keeping in mind pricing, durability, paper quality, etc., what is your favorite size trade to buy? 5-issue paperback, 10-issue hardcover, phone book size omnibus?
That's kind of an interesting question. I don't know if I've thought about it. I think the one thing that I came up with when I was thinking about it is that I like a giant book, an omnibus. I like it as an object, not terribly convenient for reading. Like it's kind of awkward to hold and, you know, like you kind of have to like sit at a table and put it in front of you.
Right. I like that he's basically given up. Like we all have it's 5-issue trade now, but it used to be the 6-issue trade was like the soft cover was like the thing I liked best. But also, it really depends on the book. I mean, I'd rather have a complete volume. So, for instance, they put out a soft cover. I'm sorry, they put out a hardcover of the first 6 issues of the Human Target. I don't want that. I want the 12-issue hardcover. I want the whole story in one book. So whatever encapsulates that the best, whatever encapsulates the, I mean, for most comics it used to, you know, it's the soft cover trades, probably the, you know, your go-to, your workhorse, your the one I've got the most of is that. But,
you know, for me, if something is 12 issues and I'm reading the book and it's split into two, there's a much better chance I'm going to keep reading if it's all one volume.
Yeah.
Because if it's the 6 issues, I'll finish that. And, oh, I'm done for now. And then it will take me forever to pick up the next thing. So I like it when it's one.
Yeah.
I like a 12. I like a 10, 12 issues.
I think that's where I'm falling. The 10, 12 issue hardcover is where I'm falling.
Because 6 issues, it doesn't feel worth it to me. And it goes, you know. But like a 10, 12, like a complete kind of thing. You know, the giant, the omnibuses, in whatever version they're in. Like when it's too big. Like, I have that amazing Spider-Man, yeah, like Marvel Omnibus, which is what, 25, 50 issues or whatever. And she's like, oh, it's so big. It's, well, just.
For me, I always think of, so when I was 22 and sort of started making the mental switch over to trades, that's basically when it happened, was with the Preacher series.
Yeah.
So, like, I hadn't read Preacher in issues, and you know, at 22, we first started out a fanboy, and that's six, when I was expanding out into books I had not read as a younger reader. I bought, you know, all nine trades off, you know, from Amazon or whatever at the time, wherever I bought them, and having that stack of the entire run in these very easily readable, carryable in my bag to work trades was great. And that's when I sort of mentally switched from I prefer these things to issues. So whenever I think in my head the ideal, it's that stack of Preacher books is like my nice platonic ideal. But now things have changed a little bit, and so probably would be the slightly bigger hardcover, mm-hmm, would be the way I'd go. But, you know, it's whatever the function cover is. Those were the each arc was in a I wouldn't want, I don't know, maybe I would, two arcs in a hardcovers versus a one arc in a trade. I don't know. But I kind of like the idea of you read an arc, you move on to the next book, which is a different arc. But, you know, I don't know.
The thing about those issues, though, is that you'd finish trade in that and you would immediately want to know what happened next, even, mm-hmm, if the arc had concluded. Because in classic comic book style, the story ends and then they give you, oh, yeah, here's what's next.
Yeah, it's not how arcs are done now. Or, yeah, right. Yeah.
Which is the same thing we were just talking about with the pick of the week.
Yeah.
The Avengers book is that, you know, it concluded, and then that last panel is like, ooh, there could be more. You don't need to keep going. You're good.
Right.
But, well, wait, what's Kang going to do?
Kang's going to keep
fighting. I want to know what Kang's going to do.
I'm excited.
And it's going to be something I've seen a lot before, and I don't care.
As long as he sits low slouching in that chair, looking all pissed off.
Drink. In control, though, but barely.
Contact@ifanboy.com is how you can write in, like Daniel and Scott. Thanks for writing in. You can also write in for our Media Splode show now that it's a new year. We bankrupted all of our old emails. So if you want to get on this show or on the
Media Splode
show.
Don't use the word bankrupt. Sorry. So
write Media Splode in the subject line if you're writing in for that. But thanks for writing in. Quick plugs. This month we have two special shows. This coming week, hopefully, we have our Book Splode. And as I mentioned last week, we had another book planned, but it's just too long to start all the things that are going on. So we're going to probably push that a month. This week, we're going to be talking about the latest edition of Black Sad from Dark Horse Comics, and that's going to be this coming week, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't read Black Sad, it's an incredible book edit from Dark Horse. It's a European comic, anthropomorphic animals in a neo-noir detective. Not neo-noir, actually. It's just noir detective story. And looking forward
to kitty cat.
Looking forward to talking about that. Have you read it yet? Okay, I'm very excited for you to get to it. You'll see why.
Okay.
And then...
Is Kang in it?
Kang is not in it, but okay. it's possibly the real world version of Kang.
I'm already disappointed.
And then the week after, we should have our Media Splode show, which Josh and Ron and I will talk about. The things we watched over the break, and not sure what else. We haven't really gone through over the rundown yet, but that'll be coming in the next 2 weeks. So, Book Splode, Media Splode in this month.
All right, we're back at it. It's fine. Whatever. You can find our 1,200 plus shows, still growing, over at ifanboy.com or wherever it is that you want to listen to podcasts. You know when people say, like, the pod when they're talking about their show?
Mm-hmm.
I hate that. Follow us at ifanboycomics on Instagram. And
any other random musings?
No, I was just thinking about it. Like, there's a show I've been listening to I really like. And they're like, oh, yeah, he was on the pod. And I'm like, fuck off. I it's a thing with me, and it's only getting worse as I get older, is that there's phrases that come up, and I don't like them because
It's the second generation of podcasters who really do that.
Yeah. Yeah,
they've made it sort of a cutesy thing. I don't even really like the word podcast. I just try to use the word show. But
yes,
it's definitely the next generation. Like, we were the first generation,
right?
But the next generation made it cutesy. It's just like, I hate it.
Language is supposed to do that. It's what happens. Yeah, it's totally fine, natural. I'm sure words that we use all the time to people 50 years old. And I was like, that's ridiculous. I don't like it. It's a pet peeve of mine. It's my old man thing. There's nothing wrong with it. I just don't like it. Anyway. Instagram, find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. The best of the weekend panels when that's a thing that happens. Yeah. You can follow Connor and I individually on Instagram at CS Kilpatrick and JA Flanagan. And that's that.
YouTube.com/iFanboys, where you'll find all of our old video shows, and you'll find this show every week. Eventually, at some point, it goes up. Sometimes there's technical problems. And please consider leaving
Rarely,
but sometimes. Please consider leaving a review or a star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Yes, we're on Spotify. We've been on there for a while, so if you don't know that, you can listen there if you have a Spotify account. I think we're almost on Amazon, too. I don't know.
A lot of places are going into podcasting,
and we're there. We are there. If we're not somewhere where you are, let us know, and we'll get on there, too.
Yeah.
But consider leaving us a review. It's a way to help the show. We thank you for doing that. And that's it for this week's show. And Josh made it all the way.
I did. Hey, you know what? That reminds me, and I know it's just the end of it, and we should be, but I had to go last week because of my job.
Uh-huh.
And I have one of those now, which makes life a heck of a lot better. But I said it before, and I won't keep doing it, but like, iFanboy, you did this for me. Like, you collectively, somebody specifically, but also several other people. And I will always be grateful for that. And I think it's amazing.
It's a fine community.
It's a fine group of folks. Connor, you said it. And it's just, everything good that's happened to me has happened because of iFanboy, is what you said. And I was like, fuck, you're right. And it's just true. Like,
that's why it always makes me laugh when people say, you guys don't like to do the show. You could not be more wrong. This whole experiment not only is the best part of our week, but has everything in our life that is good has come from this.
Yeah.
And so, smash that like button.
What we're really looking for is whatever we can say to get you to subscribe. That's what we're out here for.
There's a bell at some point. I don't know what that means. But the show's over. So thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Bye.